Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
It's 5 minutes past 8 in Abuja and Yaounde. Elsewhere in Accra, it is 7:05. A very good morning to you all, wherever you are listening to us, and welcome to Deutsche Welle's Africa Link program. I'm Isaac Mugabe, your host in Bonn, Germany. Coming up, world leaders, including UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon, gather in Addis Ababa to find ways of ending global poverty and manage climate change.
I urge world leaders and ministers gathered here this week, exercise flexibility and compromise in favor of working together for the common well-being of humanity.
Nigeria's President Muhammadu Buhari sacks his top military brass in a widely expected move as he wrestles with an insurgency by Boko Haram Islamists. Our correspondent tells us what ordinary Nigerians think about the military shakeup.
Many Nigerians are feeling that the change is necessary and that it has come in very handy and quickly.
These stories plus cinema in a backpack. How a South African entrepreneur is bringing the movies to those who can't afford the silver screen. Coming up in the next 25 minutes. Stay tuned.
Top story.
We begin in Addis Ababa, Ethiopia's capital, that is hosting the UN Summit on Development Financing this week. The meeting aims to find ways of ending global poverty and manage climate change by the year 2030. In a moment, we shall be hearing from Addis, but to start off, Africa Link's Crispin Makideu has been speaking to Owen Bardell, a development economist with the Center for Global Development in London, to find out how the outcome of this summit could benefit ordinary Africans.
What the person you mentioned, the typical African, wants is jobs rather than aid. And to have jobs, we need economic growth, we need open trade, we need investment. That's what people all across the developing world are looking for. And so we need to go beyond the fantastic achievements we've had in Millennium Development Goals, which have given people access to education and to health and to clean water. And we've made enormous progress. We haven't completely achieved them all. But to reach the last remaining Millennium Development Goals and to lift everybody out of poverty, we're going to need sustained economic growth, and that's going to need a different kind of cooperation.
The World Bank says that development assets need to go from billions to trillions. Does that strategy really work together? I mean, how do we even begin to create these jobs in Africa?
When the World Bank says that we need to get from billions to trillions, what they mean is that we have to use public resources to work together with the private sector. In the end, it's the private sector that will create those jobs, that will do most of that investment. What we can use public resources for is both to help create the conditions for that investment, create the conditions for that growth, and we can use it to protect the weakest and most vulnerable people who aren't benefiting immediately.
And what roles should emerging economies such as South Africa and Nigeria play to stimulate the growth of others?
The emerging economies are playing an enormous role in investing in developing countries, in South-South cooperation, transferring skills and ideas, and sometimes transferring foreign aid too. So we shouldn't think of the world anymore as rich countries, the Europeans and the Americans, giving money to poor countries in Africa, but as a spectrum of countries from those who developed first through the emerging economies right through to some of the poorest countries, which are unfortunately still recovering from conflict and very fragile, and for whom the prospects for economic growth are most distant.
And how do you think African countries or African economies can utilize their natural resources to sustain or to help them sustain these development goals?
It is a huge dilemma, and unfortunately there have been many cases in the past where countries, not just in Africa but across the world, have had natural resources that have been squandered by elites who have stolen the money or used it corruptly or wasted it. But there have also been fantastic examples, and Botswana is one of them, with its diamonds, that have used those resources well, invested in their people, and raised standard of living. And so what we need is accountable, responsive governments. We need transparency about the payments that are being made for these natural resources. We need those resources to be invested in people. We at the Center for Global Development have a proposal called Oil to Cash, where we propose that as countries in sub-Saharan Africa begin to exploit natural gas and oil on along the coastline, and many countries in Africa are now doing that, that that money should go into a fund that pays dividends to its people. And if the government wants to spend that on government projects, they should tax it from their citizens rather than get it directly from the sale of those natural resources. That would create a much more direct accountability relationship between government and citizens. In the end, those natural resources belong to the citizens, not the government.
Development economist Owen Bardell. During the opening day of the summit on Monday, UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon called on world leaders to be flexible and find a compromise on how to fund sustainable development goals, or in short, SDGs. That's because there are still some differences, like, for example, which countries are entitled to these development funds. Koleta Wanjohi is following the summit in Addis Ababa and sent us this report.
According to the United Nations organization, the conference's host, 30 heads of government from different parts of the world are in attendance. The Prime Minister of Ethiopia, Haile Mariam Desalegn, who has been elected as the president of this third Financing for Development conference, says that post-2015, developing countries want more recognition globally.
We want to be self-reliant, and we want to finance our own development. We want to graduate. And it is with this in mind that I say, I hope this summit will see developed countries commit to spending at least 50% of their ODA on LDCs, as well as delivering on their commitment to spend at least 0.2% of the national income on LDCs.
September 2015 will see the end of the 15-year period of implementation of the United Nations Millennium Development Goals. New sustainable development goals are to be set to run for the next 15 years. These are expected to be more people-centered and provide more critical needs, for instance, in the fields of health and education, for citizens all over the world to better their lives. This conference is happening at a time when there is still no global agreement on the new set of sustainable development goals. To begin with, the number of goals being discussed at draft level are more than the original 8 Millennium Development Goals set by the United Nations. While some countries want a number of more specific goals added, others have raised concern that the proposed goals are too many and implementation may be a challenge. UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon urges the Addis Ababa conference to try and agree more.
I urge world leaders and ministers gathered here this week to agree on an outcome that is commensurate in ambition with the Sustainable Development Goals. Exercise flexibility and compromise. Let us put aside what divides us and overcome narrow self-interest in favor of working together for the common well-being of humanity.
What is for certain is that the Addis Ababa Financing Conference must recognize the economic power of developing nations if any progress is to be made in the new anticipated development agenda, because the developing nations are growing at a fast rate. According to the World Bank, these countries carry nearly half of the world's savings and will account for almost two-thirds of them by 2030.
DW's Koleta Wanjohi in Addis Ababa.
Get the stories that are shaping the continent here on Africa Link.
Now, Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari has fired the heads of the Army, Air Force and Navy amid sharp criticism of their handling of an uprising by Boko Haram. Their dismissals came a few hours after the latest suicide bombing, which was immediately blamed on the Islamist fighters. Their replacements were announced a few hours later. Major General Tukul Yusuf Buratai from Borno State, the worst affected by the insurgency, has been appointed the new Army Chief. But the new appointments need to be confirmed by Nigeria's Senate. A short while ago, I spoke to our correspondent, Ben Shemank, and he started by telling me what ordinary Nigerians think about the military reshuffle.
Many Nigerians are feeling that the change is necessary and that it has come in very handy and quickly too. Others are feeling that these defense chiefs that have been removed, they know the antics of the insurgency, and they are able to also know the modus of operandi and all that stuff. Therefore, it's not right for them to be changed suddenly this way. But again, many other Nigerians feel that it is time to inject new blood, because the fight against Boko Haram has been dragging on and on and on with many, many attendant losses, either human or material.
So was the president not satisfied with their performance?
Well, apparently, the president made it a kind of a campaign tool that when it comes to power, he's going to rout and end Boko Haram. But we are seeing that there are attacks by Boko Haram. Churches, mosques have been attacked, markets, and of course, the children have been recruited as suicide bombers. So the president is not too satisfied, and therefore he wants to inject new blood. He decided to look for people he knows can perform, who can deliver the service, so to speak, protect lives to ensure that people go on without any let or hindrance.
And how capable are the new appointees? I mean, what are their military credentials?
Well, in terms of major credentials, Major General Tukur Yusuf Buratai, the head of our army, comes from Borno State. And, of course, the Boko Haram had earlier identified him, identified his house, identified his relations, and, of course, they've been attacking that family. And the man knows his onions very well. I'm talking of the chief of army staff. He was in the Niger Delta area. He was in Angola. And during the wars there, apart from that, he's been in charge of the artillery in Jaji. So he knows the onions very well. And it is also instructive to know that the National Security Advisor also comes from Borno State, talking of Babagana Mungunu. He is a retired Major General. He knows the terrain. He comes from there, and indeed he knows quite a lot of even Boko Haram members and their families. So these are people that can kind of deliver. Outside that, we have the Chief of Defense Staff, who is also a very sound soldier in terms of credentials. So the president has carefully done his selection, having done his research properly.
Ben Shemang in Abuja.
Africa on the move.
Well, if you live in South Africa and can't afford to go to the cinema, let me introduce you to Calvin Pala. This young South African runs a mobile cinema. Calvin carries his movie theater in a backpack. That's all he needs, and he's on the move to bring the movies. This report by Dominic Eisenhardt is now presented by Renat Rengura.
It's showtime in a tavern in rural South Africa. 24-year-old Calvin Pala has unpacked his cinema kit to bring an action movie to his hometown. The film is projected onto a large tablecloth hanging just under the blank screen of a television set. A tablet computer has made Calvin Pala the master of entertainment in Siyabuswa. Calvin's day starts with an equipment check. He tucks away everything he needs into a small backpack.
In here I have a battery and then like two speakers, yeah, for a sound. And then this side I'm having like a projector and then all the cables. Everything is in place now, and then I'm ready like to hit the road. Okay.
The battery ensures that even a power outage can't spoil the show. Calvin is part of a pilot project. Long-distance buses carry movies to rural areas in shockproof boxes. The hard drives are taken to remote bus depots to allow Calvin and other mobile cinema operators to download films onto their tablets. Calvin has been in business for 2 months, earning little more than $8 a week.
The biggest challenge for me now is like I'm competing with the pirated movies. Yeah, people like are having the latest movies, but then they are pirated. So I cannot like screen the pirated movies to the community.
Marketing the business requires plenty of footwork and lots of explaining. Calvin goes from door to door touting the advantages of a community cinema in a world dominated by DVD players. People can select films from the catalogue on his tablet. Nombulelo Trudy Kwasho is a student. She says she appreciates Calvin's efforts. He proudly accepts the compliments.
There's no any cinema or some place to watch some movies.
Yeah, like mostly the taverns, soccer pitches, yeah. So, but then in terms of like the cinema, I think I'm the guy for them.
The film project has awakened Calvin's entrepreneurial spirit. He's also started a catering business with his mother to offer food during the shows so as to earn some extra cash.
That's my belief. If maybe like I do something different, I think I'm more like having chances of succeeding and like going through the same route as everyone.
A film, a drink, and Mama Pala's hot dogs. And the stage is set for the show to begin. On this occasion, Calvin has ordered a local crime movie for the people of Siabuswa. Next, the young entrepreneur will be off to a screening at his school.
And that report was compiled by Dominic Eisenhart and presented by Renate Rengura. Zimbabweans and Africans are mourning the death of Chinjerai Hove. The Zimbabwean-born writer died in Norway, where he had been living in exile since 2001. Hove was a fierce critic of President Robert Mugabe. He won several awards for his works, including the Noma Award and German Africa Award for Freedom of Expression. Columbus Mavunga visited the home of Hove and sent us this report.
Those are some of Hove's relatives, friends and fellow artists discussing different issues at his Harare home. They told me that they were not aware of the exact cause of his death, though he had liver problems. They said they hoped that his body will be flown to Zimbabwe for burial later this week. Memori Chirere, an author, was among those present at Hove's home. He is the Secretary General of Zimbabwe Writers Association. He says he has memories of moments he shared with the late Chinjerai Hove.
There are numerous memories, and at a moment like this, many float in the mind. Memories we had reading to one another as groups. You know, he was a writer in resident at the University of Zimbabwe in the early 90s when I was a student, and I was part of his group, and we would read to one another and so on and so forth, and that remains permanent on my mind.
Hove is one of the leading figures in post-colonial literature in Zimbabwe. He has won several awards for his telling work, which include the Zimbabwe Writing Award in 1987, the Noma Award for Publishing in Africa in 1989, and a German Africa Award for Freedom of Expression in 2001. Zimbabwe-based David Mungoshi is the chairman of Pan-African Writers Association. He tells me that just last week he had a chat online with Hove. He says he asked him to write a book following his visit to North Korea.
Very jovial, lots of humor. That's Chinjerai for you. And then most recently, this G-Talk. I'm still hoping I can retrieve that. Because what he wrote for me, reminiscing about his visit to North Korea, it's so well done. I remember saying to him, this should be a book. Well, he laughed about it. He said, well, maybe you can do it. But I said, no, you are the best person to have done it. Mm-hmm. I think we'll see what we can do about that.
Since Hove left Zimbabwe in 2001 and until the time of his death in Norway, he had written many poems that mainly touched on separation. But it is his novel entitled Bones, which was published in 1988, that is among his best-known works. The book questions what difference the end of colonial rule in 1980 brought to Zimbabwe. The son of a local chief, Hove was born in February 1956 and studied at the University of Zimbabwe and then at the University of South Africa. He later worked as a teacher and a journalist. He was a known critique of President Robert Mugabe's rule, an issue which led to his exile.
That report was filed by Columbus Mavunga in Harare about the death of Zimbabwean author Chinjerai Hove. And you are listening to Africa Link straight from the studios of Deutsche Welle here in Bonn, Germany. I'm Isaac Mugabe, and I'll be back right after this.
making a difference.
Let's now head to Rwanda and bring you the story of Serge Ndekwe. He is a Rwandan entrepreneur who first worked as a taxi driver at the age of 18. A year later, he became a truck driver. And after that, the energetic young man ventured into selling cars and mobile phones. Eventually, he bundled all his energy and resources into dairy business. But even there, there were challenges. This report by Jesco Johansen is now presented by Miriam Kaliza.
Work never stops on what was Serge Ndekwe's first large project. The 35-year-old appears to be in a reflective mood as he stands on the spacious terrace of his Italian restaurant and looks out onto the lush green valley. He has invested several thousand euros into this business venture, which also includes a sports bar and a nightclub. The restaurant's many guests are treated to a splendid view of Rwanda's capital, Kigali. But at the beginning, Ndekwe experienced some very frightening moments.
We get a letter for suspension, definitely, from the district, Gasabo. So, you know, you worry a lot because you're not sure if you're going to make it, especially when you start a business like this. You don't even know if this is going to work or not.
The business had barely opened when the district closed it down, saying there was too much noise and inadequate parking space for his customers. Once more, he was forced to reach deep into his pockets. It almost ruined him. Serge Ndekwe has come up with solutions.
There's a two windows inside. The first, when we started, it was only one window. But with that problem, we agreed to, so you can see now it's double. So at least now we make sure, like, even people are here, there's some music, but it's not disturbing neighborhood.
A little later, Ndekwe visits his dairy plant. It too has seen its share of problems. Citing a lack of hygiene, the authorities shut the plant down twice, for months at a time. There were rumors that his business was an unwelcome competition for the state-run dairies. Ndekwe's products have made it to the shelves of shops throughout Rwanda. Wearing a white coat and speaking through a surgical mask, Ndekwe says that now is not the time to give up.
We got some reputation. It would be really not very smart now to close because it takes us 8 years to reach this level. I think if you give us another little effort for 1 year, this factory can become a medium factory.
He wants to expand production and modernize the plant. The dairy has a dozen employees, but Serge is aiming for twice as many. It's the only way to uphold strict production standards. Over 1,000 liters of milk are processed every day. The products range from fresh milk and yogurt to cheese. Ndekwe is certainly not giving up. In fact, a country club just outside Kigali is next. But hasn't he had enough after all the setbacks?
Of course it hurts. But then, on the other hand, I get a lot of support from the government, which push us again to continue to work like an entrepreneur.
And that is what this self-confident businessman keeps on doing as he creates jobs for others and helps shape Rwanda's future.
That report was written by Jesco Johansen. Before we call it a day, a reminder of some of the stories that we've covered for you in the last 25 minutes. UN Chief Ban Ki-moon has called on world leaders to show flexibility and compromise as they seek ways of financing development goals. Nigeria's President Muhammadu Buhari sacks his top military brass in a widely expected move as he wrestles with an insurgency by Boko Haram Islamists. We've also been hearing about a Rwandan entrepreneur, Serge Ndekwe, who beat all odds to make it to become successful by venturing into different businesses. That's all you have time for. Do send us your comments and suggestions on the program either by text message to country code 49160-957-59510 or an email to feedback.africa@dw.com or a letter to Africa Link DW 53110 Bonn, Germany. From me, Isaac Mugabin Bonn, have a good day.